A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Crohan was somewhere I was reticent to go to because I'd heard so much about it. It's not a famous place. Most people have never even heard of it. But a friend of mine, Damien Lawler, comes from there and never stops talking about it. We all have a special place in our hearts for the communities where we grew up. But I used to think Damien took this a bit far. This is him talking about his childhood.
A very idyllic childhood. You're able to cycle up and down to school. No safety concerns, no concerns about, you know, a heavy traffic or any of that sort of thing. And, you know, you grew up as part of the local community, being involved in community games, being involved in the local GAA club. Everybody coming together, you know, to participate in those things that, you know, as a community, it seemed like everybody, you know, when they were trying to make up a football team, they just didn't have enough people without every lad in each class taking part.
He talks a lot like this. His pride in his home place is something I've always found hard to get my head around. Not because Crohan is not worth being proud of. I had just never been there until recently and always struggled to understand what made it so special. Like here, he's talking about the exceptionalism of people who grew up in rural communities like Crohan.
When I would have went out to school, we would have looked down our nose at maybe the people from the towns. We could call, you know, townies, that they were soft, that if you were marking them in a game of Gaelic football or soccer, that, you know, they weren't going to be tough enough on the field. And you could see the lads that had came from communities like Crohan. You know, they were used to working hard, and then, you know, on the sports field, whether in athletics or whether in Gaelic football, they were prepared to play hard as well.
Hopefully you're getting the picture. Everything I'd heard about Crohan made it sound like God's own country. So you can imagine I was somewhat surprised when Damien got in touch earlier this year about an idea for a podcast, a story from Crohan that needed to be told. This story, in ways, flew in the face of everything I'd heard about this place. It's the story of a murder, although a highly unusual case. It had provoked an international investigation, but it was always and inextricably linked to this one community, their history, and some argue, their future. The more I looked at the story, the more I was drawn to it. Damien was right. It was a story that needs to be told. This is The Road to Old Crohan, an Irish Mystery, Episode 1. This podcast is the first of 6 episodes that reveal the story behind what has proven to be one of Ireland's most mysterious murders. It was written, researched and narrated by myself, Finn Dwyer. The series is based on additional research by Damien Lawler and Miriam Ryan. Sound is by Jason Looney. The series artwork by Keith Hines. The Road to Old Crohan was produced exclusively by the listeners of the show who generously fund my research at patreon.com/Irish podcast. It is their generosity that has made it possible to make this series free to download. Patrons receive bonus content and early access to the show. The second episode of The Road to Old Crohan is already available at Patreon. If you like the idea of listener-supported history, you can help fund my work at Patreon. My next major project is a series on the Irish War of Independence. You can find out more and support this multi-part series at patreon.com/Irish podcast. You can also support the podcast by checking out the shop at irishhistorypodcast.ie/shop. You can get lots of unique gifts there based on Irish historical figures and events. Finally, don't forget to subscribe to the show to guarantee you get episode 2 as soon as it's out. From the outset, it was obvious that this was a story of an unsettling murder, one rooted as much in the community of Crohan today as it is in their distant past. It's a story that blurs the lines between the past and the present and what our history means to us. Crohan today is a community that faces a crisis that is leading some to focus more than ever on this murder. But this is far down the line. I'm getting ahead of myself, and the beginning is always the best place to start. When Damien began to tell me about this story, it wasn't completely new to me, but I hadn't ever really connected it to the place he had grown up and always talked about. And to have any hope of telling this story, I had to go to Crohan, not only to see the landscape where these events took place, but to try and integrate the stories I had heard about Crohan, where Damien grew up, that's God's own country, with that of a brutal murder that was uncovered there in 2003. So recently I packed up some recording equipment and headed on the 80-kilometre journey from Kilkenny, where I live, to Crohan in County Offaly. The road trip takes about an hour and a half, and as you travel north from Kilkenny City, you edge around the Castlecomer Plateau. Then the road skirts around the eastern edges of the Slieve Bloom Mountains before the landscape turns remarkably flat and featureless. In some respects, you could even describe it as a bit dull. This is the Great Bog of Allen, around 1,000 square kilometres of bogs, marshes and fens that dominate the centre of Ireland. Passing through the small towns of Gieshill, Ballinagar and Dangan, the landscape has very little to it. Then, almost as if it's out of place, there is one lonely hill that rises steeply up from the bog. This was once a volcano long before humans or any recognisable ancestor of ours walked the earth. Today, what is left is a stunning feature in an otherwise uneventful landscape. It's no surprise that this, or rather its name in Irish, Cruachan, gave its name to this part of the country. This is Crohan. I was loath to admit it, but Damien was right. It's a stunning place, and everyone here knows it. Everyone I met mentioned the hill and the landscape. Damien's wife, Miriam, is not from Crohan. She comes from Kilbeggan, a few miles away, but she describes herself as a blow-in, basically someone not from the parish. Whether they're from the far side of the globe or 10 miles up the road, it doesn't matter. You're still a blow-in here. Even though she's not from Crohan, though, Miriam also speaks really highly about the area, in the same way I've heard Damien talk about it for years.
I am a blow-in. I'm originally from all of about 10 kilometres away, as the crow flies. Lived in Dublin for many years. So when I came home, when I came back here, it was like coming home, because the landscape was the same and I was quite close to home. People around here are very nice, you know. I suspect more of them know me than I know. Certainly it's a lovely place to live. The landscape is beautiful because of the hill and because of the bogs. And it's, I suppose you can hear we're sitting here and there's not a whole pile of noise and the birds are singing.
But it's not just people who live here that speak like this. This is the archaeologist, Cathy Moore, who spent several summers on excavations in the area, and she certainly agrees.
It is a bit land time forgot in a really nice way. And the hill is gorgeous, like with the graveyard, and but the bogs all around it then. It is, it's a pretty special landscape, it really is.
From my limited experience, the people of Crohan matched the landscape. The term idyllic comes to mind, and when I asked Tom Scully, a retired local guard from Dangan, a town 5 miles away, he certainly painted a picture of a harmonious community.
Dangan would be quite enough place. We'd have a sleepy enough village, that type of a scene. We certainly wouldn't be used to murders anyway.
All in all, I was seriously impressed. The landscape is incredible and the sense of community is striking. To start explaining the story that brought me here, understanding Crohan and the landscape is key. So Damien brought me on a walk towards the hill that dominates the surrounding region. An athletics coach in his spare time, he set a fast pace. Along the way, he gestured to the flags from the local GAA or Gaelic Athletics Association. These often festoon rural communities up and down Ireland when local clubs are doing well, but to see them in the summer of 2020 was strange. The season had been cancelled due to COVID. Damien explained the displaying of the flags was a gesture of solidarity with a local family who had been bereaved.
You'll see a lot of Crohan flags out. There was a recent funeral here and people got flags out, but they've stayed up then the full length of the lockdown and the time after that.
Damien is a historian. He works as a history teacher in a local school and he eased me into the history of the area. As the pace quickened and I was struggling to keep up, he pointed to a pig farm where the ruins of a castle are now part of a farmyard. This was once home to the kings of the Midlands, the O'Connors.
The O'Connors have been based here. this here was an area that even after Leash Offaly Plantation that would have stayed basically under traditional Irish control.
He was only interrupted by a passing car, but then he continued through intriguing chapters of local history, and 5 centuries later we had reached the 20th century and the War of Independence.
There was, you know, some activity here around the War of Independence, or the Tan War, and you would have had people imprisoned and house raids and stuff like that.
When we reached the foot of Crohan Hill, we stopped briefly at Crohan Stores. This was once the centre of parish life. It's a shop with 2 aging petrol pumps outside, no longer in use. It's strangely fitting or stereotypical. It almost felt like a prop inserted for the day I had arrived.
Where you're standing now is basically the centre of the of Crohan. Like it's not a village itself, but it is the area of Crohan. You've got the what used to be the shop. It closed about 8 or 9 years ago.
Then, as we climbed the hill, Damien explained a sense of history that I found unusual. Most communities in Ireland do have a deep affinity with their recent past, but in Crohan, it stretches back thousands of years, all focused around the hill, which has been the centre of community life for millennia. This is all central to the story of the murder. It won't make sense without it, so bear with me on this. It was only when I reached the top of the hill that I really got why Damien had always talked about how special this place was. The landscape is flat in all directions, so Crohan Hill is an amazing vantage point with incredible views.
As you look out all around, you see that it's completely flat. You can see mountains in the background. Some people would claim that you could see as far as Wales on a very sunny day. My eyesight's never been that good, but you can definitely see the Slieve Blooms, and you can even see as far as the Wicklow Mountains on a particularly good day. Today is almost picture perfect. I know the sky's not clear. You've got some cloud cover, but it's quite sunny and stuff like that.
It's easy to see why this hill is not only important today, but always has been. As we caught our breath at the top of the hill, Damien seamlessly took me back 4,000 years. History really seems like a living thing in this community.
Right where we're standing on top of a passage tomb. As a child, I would have been brought to Bruna Bonia to see Newgrange and to have a look around there. I would have known that here in Crohan we had something similar right at the top, a very significant site.
When we started on our journey back down the hill, Damien stopped in a local graveyard and began to ease us back to the present.
We're standing in the middle of a graveyard, from a fairly modern period. I think the grave in front of us is from 1752. And as you look around the graveyard, you see grave headstones from over the space of a couple of hundred years.
An hour later, we were back at Damien and Miriam's house. And I asked Miriam more about the history of the place and why it was so special. And a clear sense of continuity through the ages and a pride of place came across as she spoke.
You would have to wonder, like you say, there's that passage tomb up at the top. There's the well at the back. We know that holy wells were holy long before St. Patrick ever landed, for all sorts of different reasons. And you do just wonder, how long that... We know hills have always been considered holy, no matter what whether it was Christianity or pre-Christianity. So perhaps this has been going on for a very long time. I mean, one of the things when we were looking into this, the youngsters, and not always the youngsters, would set fire to the firs up the hill. And apparently that tradition goes back a very long time. And you might think, oh, that's just kids messing. But if it is, it's kids have been messing in the same way for centuries.
Archaeological surveys have confirmed this ancient history. Cathy Moore, an archaeologist by trade, worked on those surveys.
During the noughties, I was part of a field survey unit called the Irish Archaeological Wetland Unit, and we were based in University College Dublin. We were funded by the state, and our brief was to survey state-owned industrial peatlands, so essentially Bordenamona bogs of the Midlands. And between 2000 and 2002, we surveyed almost all the bogs surrounding Crohan Hill. So Crohan Hill is this, immense, dramatic hill in the middle of a really flat landscape, and at its base all the way around it are quite large tracts of raised bog. And we used to go out in the summer for maybe 6 to 10 weeks at a time. And in those 3 years, we found about 1,200 archaeological sites in the area surrounding Croaghan Hill. So that's a huge amount of sites to have discovered in relatively short field seasons. Those bogs were absolutely full of archaeology. And I suppose that the bog that's closest to Croaghan Hill is Ballybeg Bog, which is just at the northeastern foothills of Croaghan Hill. And we found about 105 sites in there. And it was really unusual material. It was a really exciting bog to work in. We found unusual prehistoric activity in that bog that we hadn't seen before. We also found a lot of artifacts in that bog. We found things like a beautifully preserved wooden yoke that would have been used on draft animals. And that was dated to around, I think, 800 BC. We found an early Bronze Age bow stave, so a longbow made of yew. We found trackways. We found some prehistoric occupation sites. It was a really unusual, really different landscape in Ballybeg Bog to what we usually found.
Hearing the accounts from local people and the ancient history of the place, it's easy to let the mind race and think Croaghan is almost a magical landscape with its history that stretches back thousands of years where life is perfect. But this is 2020 and everything is going wrong, from climate change to pandemics, and Croaghan is not without its problems. It first popped up in a throwaway remark from Damien when he was talking about his childhood.
You know, like obviously as an adult you see different problems or whatever else.
However, when I asked Damien about crime in the area, the answer was somewhat surprising, given the way he talks about his community. But it makes sense. Nowhere is perfect.
Where most people have electric gates at this stage, you'll see most houses have cameras outside them. You know, their houses are broken into. And I suppose, as any community, you'd hope that maybe that crime comes from outside the community. But generally, you know, a lot of the time, there will be, you know, there will be some sort of a local aspect to whatever crime.
Miriam tempered this with her experiences.
And it is the stereotypical rural crime that you hear about, break-ins and that sort of thing. But no, I certainly don't feel that it's unsafe, or I certainly don't feel that the kids aren't safe.
The more we talked, the complexity of life in the area began to emerge. Low-level crime you find in any rural community is by no means the most pressing problem people here face. Indeed, in this idyllic landscape, a major crisis is unfolding.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Croaghan stands at a crossroads facing a very uncertain future. While there's an intense pride in history, the people here are equally proud of the fact that they, against the odds, built a thriving community from almost nothing through the 20th century. But this is all changing now. You see, Croaghan is almost like an island surrounded by bogs. Fertile land is very limited, and after World War II, even better off rural communities across Ireland experienced a major crisis as mechanisation on farms left many unemployed. Croaghan, however, was different. They embraced major changes and a form of industrialisation. This is an important part of the story.
That collapse of the agricultural economy, where agriculture became much more mechanised and the demand for labour on farms became much less, that's been experienced throughout all of Ireland. But in here, you know, we got a way out of it because the industrial type economy that was based around Bord na Mona and was based around the ESB allowed people, you know, to survive a bit longer economically.
Damien mentioned two organisations there. Bord na Mona, which literally means the Turf Board, and the ESB, the Electricity Supply Board. both of which established large-scale industries in the region around Croaghan. Borna Mona began to harvest turf from the bogs on an industrial scale, while the ESB opened a peat-burning power station. This transformed what had essentially been a wilderness into a major source of jobs. Damien's father, Eamon, who worked for the ESB and is now in his 70s, remembers the heyday of this employment when the bogs had to be drained initially by hand but then using machinery. The scale of employment was enormous. It even led to immigration into the area from the impoverished west of Ireland.
In this area here, they actually had camps, you know, sort of work camps. People from all over Ireland, you know, from Cork, and they used to call them Westerns, actually. They're, you know, there was a massive amount of people from the west of Ireland all working on Borna Mona. You wouldn't be talking hundreds, you could be talking thousands.
This transformed not only Croaghan, but also communities across the Midlands. Previously, small farmers had been dependent on the vagaries of the market for their income. After the arrival of Borna Mona and the ESB, this changed, as Eamon now explains.
Small farmers, they got very well off. You know, where there would be sort of subsistence, there would be bringing out their animals to sell at a certain time of the year, and they'd be sort of forced to take whatever they got for them, and they'd be, whereas once Borna Mona and ESB came, they weren't totally dependent. They were still farming, and but they were working, and they had a weekly income, which they weren't totally dependent on agriculture and whatever, and like it was a big lift up to families and everybody because of it, like, you know. Borna Mona paid wages that were way ahead of what farmers would be paying, and the ESB paid wages that were higher than farmers, and gave everyone a chance to, you know, they could educate their children and they could do lots of things that they couldn't do up to that, like, you know.
In this economic boom lay the origins of the crisis now gripping Croaghan. It would also lead to the discovery of the body in 2003, but we'll come to that. Today, Croaghan is facing a crisis because it is essentially on the front line as Ireland tries to tackle climate change. The peat extraction that was fueling the local economy and provided the jobs Eamon Lawler talked about is a carbon fuel and indeed is one of the worst. The Irish government have committed not only to stopping the industrial extraction of peat from bogs, but all turf cutting is coming to an end soon. Miriam explained more about this.
You know, it's becoming a cutaway bog. The bog is, it is being eroded down to the point where it doesn't return. So apart from that sort of very practical situation that it's almost exhausted, there is the idea as well that it's not sustainable. And it's probably not something that we should be doing. We probably should be looking at alternative sources of energy and more sustainable practices.
The declining industry can be seen all across the area. Rusting machinery and giant heaps of milled peat, which seem to have been abandoned, can be seen in many of the bogs. While most accept this is necessary, Miriam raised some of the concerns the closure of the bogs will mean for this community. It's a very worrying time in the area. Indeed, Miriam herself works as a lecturer in Dublin City University, and she, like many of her generation, now have to commute long distances to work. She now explains how day-to-day life is going to change.
Generations of people heating their houses, getting their employment. It's a massive part, I think, of the identity. Like, you do have the expectation, I suppose, that this is how you heat your house. The Borna Mona and the ESB, which sort of they were quite interlinked. There was employment around in the area, you know, that was the sort of the fixed steady employment. You could kind of depend on that, I suppose. Large numbers of the community did. And that's becoming a bit precarious. So I think on the one hand, people aren't blind to what's happening. But on the other hand, it is a big part of community and part of the way of life that's coming to an end, I suppose.
Kevin Barry from Dangan, a few miles away, who spent his entire life working on the bog, articulated best the fears many in the area have about what lies ahead.
I would have been reared right beside the bog as well myself. I reared the family out with any home, built a house, and it's coming to an end, I know, but it'd be sad for me now. I don't know where they're ever going to get jobs that come ever like it again, and great, good jobs now.
No one really knows for sure what the future holds for Croaghan. And this is worrying because Bord na Mona and the ESB were central to the sense of identity and pride people here felt, and now it's being ripped away. Therefore, it does seem strange that in this moment of great uncertainty, this seemingly idyllic community is increasingly talking about one of its greatest mysteries, arguably its darkest secret. This is actually why Damien contacted me, saying the story needed to be told. A body discovered in 2003 during work on the bog is both intrinsically linked to Crohan's past and perhaps its future. That day in 2003 was certainly traumatic. Kevin Barry, who we just heard from, who has worked on the bog all his life, remembers it very well.
I was working for Bulrush Horticultural out in Crohan Bog, digging drains, and I was digging this drain this particular day. I was around 3:30 in the evening, and I dug up a bucket full of stuff, and I thought I seen something like a leg hanging out of the bucket, and I go out to examine it, and when I looked at it, it was an arm. When I knew it was an arm, because I got down and looked, I could see the fingernails and everything, and they were perfect on it, as good as anyone's. So I got back into the digger and I spread it out, and there was a sort of, it was a torso, it was the upper part of the body these two arms and the body.
What Kevin had found was deeply distressing. There was no question the person had been murdered. All that remained was a human torso with its arms intact. The head was missing, as was the rest of the body beneath the navel. They had suffered appallingly. Perhaps what made it even more distressing was that Kevin had not just found a skeleton, he had discovered a human body with skin.
Torso was the very same as real hard leather. Two arms was fully done, and you could see where he was staked to the ground. And the muscles of his arm, you could see where the hazel rods was pointed and put through his arm. And there was a bracelet on his left arm, up over where the hazel rods was put through him.
Shocked and astounded, Kevin's thoughts immediately went to one place.
Yeah, I thought it might have been Fiona Pinder, and I said that all along, I thought, because that was the highlights that was going around here the whole time that time.
Fiona Pender was a local woman from Tullamore who went missing in 1996. This had led to extensive searches, but these had failed to locate Fiona or any trace of what had happened to her. There was, at the time, widespread speculation that Fiona, along with a series of other young women who had disappeared in the Midlands of Ireland, were the victims of a serial killer. As his initial shock subsided, Kevin began to realise the body he had discovered could not have been that of Fiona Pender.
Then after a while I grew that I knew it wasn't it, because the hands is fierce big. That man was 6'6". I knew then it wasn't a girl's hand anyhow, and he was a big, very big man.
For Kevin Barry, still on the bog, his immediate concern was that he had damaged the body.
Night part in, I was after doing harm with the bucket of stuff as well. And
Kevin then rang his boss.
I rang my boss. He wasn't long after leaving the bog, and I rang him, and but he says, I don't want to see your body. He says, what about me up here beside it anyhow? He says, you may come back anyhow. And, oh yeah, I will come back, says Kevin. And he came back, and he had a look at her, and he said, we'll have to get the guards.
The Gardaí, the Irish police, were then contacted.
The guards come out there from Eaton Derry, and Tom Scully was the Dangan guard, but he was working from Eaton Derry, and he was on in maybe 15 minutes or less. We met him in the town of Dangan, we brought him out to it, and then he rang back in, and in 20 minutes, the whole place was littered full of cars.
Tom Scully was the guard on duty that day.
I was working that day. I was in Eaton Derry. I got the call that there was a body found in a bog in Dangan, and I went to the scene. At the scene, I met Kevin Barry. He was the chap that on the digger that found him.
TV shows like CSI lead us to believe that the early stages of a murder investigation are all flashing blue lights and drama, but the initial phase of Crohan was quite different.
From a factual point of view, it was dull enough. I was on my own most of the day there with him.
Ultimately, Tom's role was to secure the scene.
Just to secure the scene, make sure that no members of the public get in until the technical bureau or some crowd like that come down and take a look.
That wouldn't happen until the following morning, but when Kevin Barry arrived into work the day after he found the body, the situation had changed dramatically.
The next morning I went into work, there was that many cars that Harry could get into work, and the sergeant of Dangan, Joe Egan, was there the next morning, and Then there was more guards there going around, but it was the biggest job was to keep them away from the body. They all wanted to get up to get a photograph of the body. And he had a full-time job keeping them away, and that's the truth, yeah. And we had to make bridges up to it, sort of with timber and made bridges up to it, because we knew that there'd be more people coming, and Dr. Mary Cassidy, that one, she was coming as well.
So Kevin there is talking about Professor Mary Cassidy, one of Ireland's state pathologists at the time. She was contacted to carry out an autopsy on the body.
I was initially contacted by the Gardaí, and that's the norm in cases where the coroner has been informed that there's been a body found. And they normally leave it to the Gardaí to contact the relevant personnel. And in a case like this, where there is an unusual find, it usually would be contacting the Office of the State Pathologist, but also having a Garda presence in the form of the Technical Bureau. And that's the group of Gardaí who are specially trained in investigating suspicious deaths and homicides. And so they comprise a team of a photographer, a fingerprinter, ballistics expert, mapper, and anybody else they think might be relevant to any investigation. So we were all dispatched to the scene of the find of the body.
She arrived in Croaghan that morning and remembers the scene that greeted her.
So I arrived at the scene and was escorted across the field to where the body was lying. But this time it was covered over. And as I say, the photographer had taken photographs. They had had a look at it. So when I arrived, they pulled back the coverings to reveal this body.
For Professor Cassidy, even though she had had years of experience, it was quickly obvious to her this was not a normal case.
Well, it was way outside my area of experience. I had never dealt with anything like this before. So it could have been months old, it could have been years old, hundreds of years old, it could have been thousands of years old.
Meanwhile, the community was stunned. Damien Lawler, who was working away from Croaghan at the time, now talks about how people felt about the fact that a body had been lying somewhere where they had worked on the bog year in, year out.
The community in Croaghan itself, nobody expected that a body was going to be taken out of the bog. Everybody spent so much time down there cutting turf, putting it in heaps, loading it up in trailers. You know, the last thing you expected that a body was going to fall out of the side of a drain.
The discovery of this body was only the beginning. In the coming days and weeks, teams of experts would arrive in Croaghan trying to find clues. Tune in next week to part two of The Road to Orcrohan, when this murder investigation takes a very unusual twist.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.